Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Loveline with Dr. Chris starts.
3, 2, 1.
Now.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope your week is starting to wind down well. We've got our question of the night on our Loveline IG page, as always, so weigh in on that and follow us, and we'll be breaking that on down later in the show, as well as sliding into the DMs, and as always, tackling your pressing sex, relationship, and love questions. But let's open the show tonight talking about some news. A family accidentally booked a pride flight from New York to London. So mom, dad, and their two sons, they just thought they were taking a basic trip on Virgin Air from London to New York. And little did they know that there was going to be an entire pride event taking place on the 8-hour flight. This would have given me a complete heart attack and headache. This kind of stuff stresses me out. I prefer headphones and movies and sleeping. But the unsuspecting family went along with it. They absolutely committed to the madness, as they say. And there's photos and videos of the young children bouncing up and down on their seats as Lady Gaga blasts from the speakers. Basically, the flight had drag queens. They did sing-alongs. They had LGBTQIA crew that served refreshments. I mean, this is pretty intense. The family said it was brilliant. The kids enjoyed it, and the 8 hours flew by. I love that part of it. I can imagine the need for time to fly by. I'm looking at photos that a well-known drag queen from London DJing at one end of the airplane and people just standing there with cocktails in their hands. I don't know. I mean, it sounds fun for those that like to party. Again, it would have stressed me out. I prefer more of a quiet flight, so I would have probably jumped out of the airplane. Pushing forward. I love this story. Straight pride organizers said they were terrorized by glitter. Terrorized. Glitter is a horrifying thing to find in an envelope. Organizers who are hosting the controversial straight pride event, which will take place in Boston in August, the organization that's throwing it, their name, ready for this one? Super Happy Fun America. Oh, yes. These days, unfortunately, anyone has a name America in their name, we assume that they're white supremacist or Confederist. I'm making that word up. But basically, they received suspicious letters. They called the State Police Bomb Squad, FBI, and three area fire departments. I mean, that is definitely taking a lot of time, energy, and funds away from places where they're needed. But nonetheless, opened the envelopes, and all that was found inside were Bible verses and glitter. You know, the straight pride thing is a hot mess, but now they understand what it's like to really feel oppression and violence. I'm sorry that they got that envelope. It must have been scary for them. But that is a standard in some people's lives, having their lives threatened, feeling unsafe walking down a street holding hands with someone they love, feeling unsafe maybe walking down the street in their gender presentation, unsure if a beer bottle is going to come flying through the air and hit them in the head. So, you know, the straights that really think that they need to celebrate pride because they're oppressed, now they understand what oppression and violence really feels like. So props on that one. A local ice cream man here in California, he took to social media to let influencers know, guess what? You pay double. That's right. He was tired of influencers asking for free ice cream. He does celebrity events and he got so burned out. He says, we truly don't care if you're an influencer or how many followers you have. We'll never give you free ice cream in exchange for a post on your social media. It's literally, he says, a $4 item. Well, now it's $8 for you. Hashtag influencers are gross. You know, he's got my full support. I'm well aware of a lot of influencers that are constantly reaching out for free things. And at this point, there's so many influencers that there really aren't anymore. And the owner of the ice cream company told Newsweek, LA's full of so many influencers with large followers. They're actually fake. Most of them have paid for their likes and followers. Anyone can have a following, he says, if you pay for it. Just Google social media bots. You know, again, this man has bills. He has a family and children. You know, the people that have bills and also need to pay for education for schools, they don't care about, you know, celebrity posts. That's not going to handle his financial situation. So look, he's got support from me. I've said this before, and this has upset some people on my social media. We have to stop promoting the whole influencer component, because a lot of what they're promoting is just problematic advertisements, you know, things that are really sexist, body shaming, body policing, you know, anti-aging. It's a mess. And so I'm okay with the idea of influencers slowly dwindling away. I was talking about this a few weeks ago. Instagram is proposing the possibility of no longer posting follower numbers on people's pages. I love that. Disempower them. Let it be what it was meant to be. Just people sharing their lives and people able to follow it. Now it's become a big business. People's value and worth are tied to it. It's become literally a social issue and a mental health issue. Let's get away from that. But I love this. So he has a sign now in his ice cream truck saying influencers pay double. I'm not mad at that. I think there's something really powerful in that. People need to be given funds so they can actually pay their bills. We're at that period of time, though, where people don't want to pay for anything anymore. Everyone wants freebies. So that's that. Nivea, the popular moisturizing brand, a major advertising firm who used to represent them, has cut ties with them over a homophobic remark. One of the executives said, and I quote, "We don't do gay at Nivea." Well, good to know. There's a wealth of people that don't want to support any organization that's oppressive or homophobic. So I'm proud of you guys. The advertising agency Foot, Cone, and Belding, FCB, one of the world's largest, they're standing up for their own ethics. And they're saying, look, there comes a point in every long-term relationship when you reflect on what you've accomplished and you set your sails where your journey will take you next. Beautiful way, excuse me, beautiful way of basically saying, you guys are homophobes and we don't want any association with you. You know, I think that's phenomenal. I think ethics need to be something that's taken into account more so. And that's not just for people working with other organizations or corporations. It's really important for the products that we spend our money supporting and keeping in existence. It's really good to look at where the money is going from the companies that we're supporting with our spending power. Are they going into organizations that are working against who you are in terms of your sexual or gender identity and even your personal politics? I mean, when I was looking deep into who is funding the Trump campaign and administration, it was distressing to see some of the restaurants and organizations that I was quite fond of that I have had to divest my funds and my attention. So sorry, Nivea. Apparently you're going to wind up getting canceled, it looks like, but I'm proud of you, FCB, for taking your advertising agency power away from them and just kind of letting them do their thing on their own. And that's the thing. Look, let your ethics be known and let people make decisions as to who they want to support. I think that that's important and powerful. That's a good use of social media, not creating influencers to make money off ads, but to use it as a way to communicate ethics and politics so we can have a better understanding of what we're supporting with our money, because that matters, right? And if you're of any minority status, you know that everything is political and that often your safety and your life is at stake. And so I'm glad that that's something that's taken a shift. So again, we got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. So follow us and wait on that. And as always, phone lines are open, 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Loveline, and we've got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. So follow us, hit us up with your answers, and we'll be breaking that on down later in the show. And of course, slide in into the DMs. But what are the rules for casual relationship? What are the tips to help us manage these things? Because again, love and sexuality are wild, wild things, and just having a little bit of a framework to enter into them can really help you avoid some of the downsides and the struggles. First off, the whole point of a casual relationship is that it's mainly about just having fun. It's one of those rare relationships whose only goal is about fun and sexuality. It's not supposed to have a lot of heaviness, not supposed to have a lot of expectation. It's because you're either still getting over someone or you like someone just enough to spend time with them and date them casually, but they don't really meet the criteria, consciously or unconsciously, of what you'd want for a more serious partner. Or you're just wanting to move slow and take your time. But that's okay. Casual relationships, as we said, still have a lot of value. It's just you want to be honest about that. So what are the rules? First off, know that you're not going to be each other's first priority. And that's a hard one for some people to accept if they're only casually dating one person. But the whole point, again, is that it's casual and that there's not a lot of expectations and that work is going to come first, your friends might come first, and that this person, you know, you treat them with compassion and care because it's a human being, but they're just not going to be the most important thing to you. So you can't expect to be seen on holidays or Valentine's Day, and maybe even your birthday might not be celebrated. It really depends on how casual it is. But it's about just really enjoying each other's company. You know, it's kind of like dessert. You know, the entrees, other things in your life, and this is just supposed to be fun. So you have to understand that it's not a committed, serious relationship, and other priorities are probably going to come first. And that's the beauty of this, is that there's not a lot of expectation. You also want to be thoughtful about what you do while with each other, because there are some things that are called attachment-based behaviors, and those are the things that are going to really lead to people feeling a little bit more than casual. And that's like, you know, excessive cuddling, lots of eye contact, spending a lot of time doing a lot of emotional processing. I mean, those are the things that you try to do to form a deeper, more serious relationship. And so casual relationships are about really avoiding some of that and just keeping it very light and fun and simple. So just kind of track that a little bit, because essentially, as the kids say, you're trying to not catch feelings. You're trying to kind of keep a border, a boundary around that, and just kind of really enjoy each other. Sex has a lot of emotionality that comes with it and attachment. So it's about really just trying to manage that well. Talk about the rules, right? Like I'm a big fan of people discussing expectations and boundaries so that no one's feelings are hurt. You know, really making sure that everyone understands that this is something that's casual and supposed to be fun, and that you're not necessarily wanting or working towards something serious or deep partnership. So just own that and talk about it and have confidence in owning that. There's no shame in that. It shouldn't be something that someone's offended by if you're just wanting something casual. So own that it's because of who you are and where you are in your life. And just, it's an act of care to say that. Be careful about not intertwining your lives too much as well. You know, casual relationships, you might all hang out together, meet each other's friends, but you just want to take things like that a little easy. Maybe focus if you're going out to dinner or spending money that you each pay your own way. Because you just want to avoid any mixed signals or things that usually are part of a more serious relationship. Also, if someone tells you they want something casual, believe them. Don't go in saying okay to that if that's not what you're wanting or open to, thinking that you're going to secretly get them to attach and want more from you. That's unfair. It's dishonest. It's usually just not going to go that way. So if someone says I want something casual and you don't, this is not the right thing for you. And if someone says that that's what they're looking for, you have to take that at face value. So that's the first piece. Don't mislead around that. You know, also you have to talk about sexual health, STIs and protection. Because again, casual dating is about dating and having sex with other people. And so you want to really talk about what does that mean for each other? What precautions are you taking? How are you trying to practice safer sex? And lastly, make sure you're both dating other people. That is how we avoid the jealousy thing. If you have others in your life, you will go to them with your needs as well. You will not be looking for one person to give you all the desire and attention and love and affection. You're kind of dispersing it, and it takes pressure off that one person, and it really just lets them occupy a casual space in your life. So again, jealousy might come up. It's part of the human experience, but the way you really deal with that and push back on that is by making sure you're both seeing other people. And you don't even have to like discuss the details of that. It's just understood that there's others in our life and that's what keeps this casual. But you don't need to discuss the other names and things you're doing with the other people. That can just kind of be hurtful. So keep it light and fun. I mean, that's the gift of it, but you just want everyone on the same page, because this isn't about letting anyone down or hurting anyone's feelings, right? Like this is supposed to be acknowledged and owned. It's not supposed to be about a manipulation where you're coming off as though you're working on something serious and you want more, but secretly you're not. So just use those words. I'm a big fan of people using words. If you're asking someone on a date, use the word date. If you're breaking up with someone, you got to use the word breakup. And if you want something casual, you have to absolutely use that word. It's all about the care and compassion. Love lines, phone lines are always open. 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE. 001. And of course, we still got time, so weigh in on our question of the night on our Loveline IG page. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
All right, we're back. And of course, our question of the night is up on our Loveline IG page. So hit us up with your answers, because we'll be breaking that on down later in the show. And of course, as always, sliding into the DMs Right now, though, let's talk about casual dating. You know, one of the things that I see coming into my office is people not even understanding what the word dating means. Now, you have to remember, dating is a relationship because you are forming an attachment with another person, right? So I want people to honor that you are forming a something. But dating isn't the final relationship. Dating is the exploration of whether or not we have the chemistry and compatibility and could or should be in a relationship. But a lot of people make dating the actual relationship immediately. And what happens is you attach and you move fast out of excitement. Everything seems cute and workable. You delete all your apps. And what happens is you work your way in too fast and then you find out that you're possibly not compatible psychologically, sexually, or socially. Because again, those are the three levels of compatibility you're always assessing. The psychological compatibility would be, you know, the intellectualism, the emotional, the psychological. What is it like to sit down and have these conversations? And then the physical is the affection, sex, eroticism. Do we both like the same amount of touch and closeness? Do we have similar sex drives? Or even what we call sexual scripts, the kind of sex we like to have and what we like to do. And then the ever important, which is often overlooked or not really taken into account, is social compatibility. Do you like to go to bars or not? Do you like to spend a lot of time with friends or around crowds or not? Are you more indoorsy or outdoorsy? And those factors all matter. And we've talked about this before where if you have all three, that's awesome. Congrats. But you need at least two. Because if you're operating only on one level of chemistry and compatibility, if that disappears or that's really, you know, something that's a struggle during a phase, you really don't have much. So ideally, you have at least two of those. But that's what dating's about, going through some milestones and really assessing all that, the sustainability of that, the strength of that. And dating is often about being with multiple people at the same time. And that's kind of the hidden secret that people aren't comfortable acknowledging, that early on, you're entering someone's life while it's already in motion. So potentially, and in theory, they should be seeing and talking to other people in different phases of development. And you have to be open to that. And I want everyone to do that. And then you get to a place where you've assessed everything and you have that talk, the good old defining the relationship talk. You know, do we both want the same thing? Are we wanting monogamy or not? And kind of what do we want to do about this? But that's a struggle that I keep seeing in my office. You know, people feeling the pressure upon going on a couple really good dates to immediately stop seeing other people. And I tell them, not always a good idea. And for those clients of mine that move really fast, and again, there's no right speed, but move faster than is what's, you know, in their best interest, I remind them, if you're dating multiple people, that inherently is a break. That inherently slows you down because you're having to distribute your time and energy to multiple people. So casual dating's good. You know, it's a sign that you are looking for relationality, right? It's not a sign that you're not serious. And that can take a different, you know, amount of length of time for different people. For some people, it's weeks and months. Other people, they kind of hang in there for a year or so. But it's all about going through different developmental stages to really see, what is this person like over holidays? What is this person like during the week versus the weekend? How accessible are they? What are they like during a very stressful day? Because things are easy when things are easy. When things are good, it's quite simplistic. Enjoy that. But it's when the conflict and difficulty and stressors show up that we really get to learn about who this person is and how they're going to really be able to be available to us as a support or not. And so, again, casual relationships shouldn't be disparaged and not taken seriously because there's a lot of value in that. But also remember, it's a person. It's a person on the receiving end. And although it might not be a serious committed relationship yet, it is relational. And so you have to take responsibility for ending it. You have to take responsibility for caretaking it, and you have to take the other person's feelings into consideration, even if it's quote unquote casual. We sling that word around way too often as though it lets you off the hook, as though bad behavior is allowed, right? It's just casual. It's nothing serious. But I want people to really shift that and again, fold in more compassion. And I think the beauty is also between serious relationships. A lot of people really drag their feet and they don't want to get back in the dating world. But again, the studies are always showing that the length of time between relationships doesn't determine its health, longevity, or sustainability. And for many, getting right back out into the dating world really increases their sense of dateability. And they're reminded that they're desirable and that other options really exist. I'm working a lot right now in my practice with a decent number of people that are really struggling to get out of, you know, unhealthy, toxic relationships. And part of them dating again is what helps them, right? They see that there are other options. They're reminded of what health can look like. It distracts them. And it gives their quote-unquote ex competition, healthy psychological competition in their brain, where they're able to be focused on something else and moving towards something else. So that's hyper important. It's hyper healthy. So just remember that. Casual dating's good. It's assessing if we want a relationship. It's not the actual fully evolved landing point, but it's seeing if we should or could do that. But nonetheless, it's another person and you have to add some seriousness to it, right? You're responsible for how you impact that person. So take it seriously to at least that extent. That's quite meaningful. Phone lines are always open. 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001. When we come back, we got a lot more sex and relationship stuff to unpack. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. And guess what, y'all? It is time to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding into the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. Okay, I got two questions that came into my own DMs yesterday. Here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris, I'm going to edit out names. My name is Blop Blop. I listened to you on Loveline, and I wanted to know about becoming a sex therapist. I want to know where I need to start. I have a BA and an MBA already. Where do I need to go from here to get on the right path? I'm actually glad you asked me this. I get asked questions like this all the time, and I lovingly just don't have the time to walk everyone through the process, especially because it's going to be a little bit different for everyone. But I think it's important, and I'm always complimented that more people want to get in the field. There's a time when no one really knew what sex therapy was, and so I'm thankful to be able to really put it on the map and to show people that it can be a legitimate career choice. So a few things. First off, you have to go to school and get a master's in something mental health related. So you want to go get a master's in either psychology or clinical mental health. And it really depends on what kind of therapist you want to be. So think about that one, where clinical psychology master's is going to be more centered around diagnostics, where clinical mental health social work is going to definitely be more rooted in feminism and social justice, heavily social justice based. And so that's something that was important for me. So I went that route. And you'll do the same clinical classes. You'll have to do an internship and a practicum. And then you'll sit and you'll get licensed with your master's. And that's important because in order to become a sex therapist, you have to already be a licensed therapist. So go to school and get your master's in counseling, psychology, or clinical social work. Get licensed. Then I am the director of clinical education for a group called the Sexual Health Alliance. And with them, I travel the country training therapists, doctors, nurses, and MDs in sex therapy. And you get certified through us. So get licensed as a therapist, and then go on my socials, track down where I'm lecturing, contact the organization, get involved in the process. But it's a bunch of requirements that have to get met. You know, becoming a sex therapist, it can take, depending on how fast you move and the available income, it can take 3 to 5 years accruing all the different requirements, because there's clinical requirements and human sexuality requirements to be able to get certified. And you also have to do supervision because it's a true specialization. There's a lot of people running around without being certified or even having done any of the training that are using these sex expert kind of terms, unfortunately. But getting certified is a really good way to really demonstrate to the clients you're going to work with and the world at large that you truly, truly are, you know, an expert in the field of human sexuality, sex therapy, and sexology. So, yeah, good luck though. All right, here's another one. Hey, Dr. Chris, my son pointed out today at the fashion mall in San Diego that all the big brand stores have everything for Pride Week, but he also feels that stores are capitalizing on merchandise. We are wondering if any profits or portions go to any programs for education on the matter. That's all. And then there's like a little pride flag. It's a good question. Yeah, there's a lot of stores that are throwing pride flags on things. Some of them are actually not allies, and they're literally just realizing that we can make money if we throw a pride flag. We really don't care about gay rights. We're not donating any money. We don't have any, you know, gay individuals on the board or in the company, and that's unfortunate. And so you kind of have to ask company by company, because then there are some other organizations where they're donating 100% of the proceeds to LGBTQIA-based organizations, which is phenomenal and stunning. And they also really pay attention to having members of the community working for the organizations. So you have to do a little Googling to find out, or ask the company themselves, hey, what percentage of your proceeds actually go to LGBTQIA organizations? And again, some of them are going to say none, and that's really heartbreaking. And others really do make it, you know, their job to support the community. And I think that's freaking phenomenal. Others, it might be a small amount, not 100, but there's still decent percentages. Some of them have a cap, you know, where they're donating a certain percentage up to a certain amount. But it's awesome, you know, in some ways. So you just got to ask questions. All right, Sliding Into DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. Take a little break. We'll be back. You're listening to Loveline on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. And of course, we got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. So weigh in on that. We'll be breaking that on down later in the show. And phone lines are always open. 833-LOVE-001. 833-LOVE-001. So let's talk about workplace burnout. The World Health Organization has recently updated and expanded their definition of burnout. Now it's going to apply more to the work environment. In the past, it was more diversified and included other areas of life, but they're starting to realize that, yes, in our capitalist culture where we are too focused and workaholic, that work tends to be the number one place where people are getting burnout. I mean, it's interesting. Most people spend more time at work than they do at home or anywhere else. They spend more time with their employer or employees than they do with their primary family and loved ones. It's a fascinating thing. So, of course, that's where the stress is going to come. But fortunately, and I'm going to talk to you about the signs of burnout, just notice how it's a little victim blamey. You know, employees don't want to be burnt out. They don't choose this overproductive structure. They would love to be off the clock at certain hours, but you know, employers and corporations tend to overwork and overstress their employees. But as you'll see in this definition, it's kind of putting some of the responsibility on the employee as though this is something they need to do. And what really bums me out is the solution. And I'm looking at some of the articles that are talking about this, including the World Health Organization. They're basically saying if you meet these signs, you might benefit from therapy. To do what, though? Learn better how to participate in a system which is problematic, toxic, and burning you out? And that's why I laugh at some of these, you know, work yoga meditation programs where they're not looking out for your health. They're doing it so that you can go back and be more productive. The solution is to shorten our work hours. The solution is to not work 5-day work weeks, but instead 4. The solution is to be able to go offline when you get home from work and not be readily available on call all the time. That's the solution. Nonetheless, let's talk about what they're calling out burnout. First off, is if you're finding it difficult to cope with workplace stress. Yeah, that's a no-brainer. And again, they're implying that that means there's a disorder within you and you need therapy to work that out. When no, that's a sign that you need to set boundaries with your employer or get a new job. Also, if you're drained from work, if you find yourself exhausted or depleted from work, again, the issue isn't with you, it's with your job and your current work structure or lack of boundaries with your employer. They're also saying if you don't find pleasure in your work, if you're not feeling connected, purposeful, or fulfilled by your work, yes, then that might be a sign that maybe you should spend 40 to 60 hours a week doing something that's going to give you more pleasure and meaning. I agree. Maybe it's time to leave your job. But again, they don't offer that as a solution. They basically, again, go back to meditation, yoga, go to therapy. It's like, no, maybe you need a new job or to set boundaries. And finally, if you have negative feelings about your work, if when you're thinking about your job, negative thoughts arise, I think for a lot of us, that's what we have. You know, I laugh at some of the memes where they're getting interviewed and the interviewer saying, why do you want this job? Or why is this job important to you? And the person's saying, because it's really important to me to be able to eat and pay my bills. Like, that's why most people want a job. No, most people don't find the core mission statement of their job meaningful, but we got to work. We got bills. So again, I don't want people, if they're feeling burnout at work, to blame themselves. It's not that you're doing something wrong. It's that we're being forced to work too many hours. We should not be working 5-day work weeks or 6-day work weeks, and we should be able to go offline once we get home. I think it's really beautiful, and I work with clients on being able to do this, where they legitimize and are proud of the fact that they'll say, I'm not working at all over the weekend, or yeah, I take a day off, or whatever it is. We feel like we have to, though, legitimize. I work so hard, I earned a day off. No, take a day off even if you're not working hard. Like, you have a right to that, you know? But we feel like we have to back it up with how hard we're working, and people are so proud that they're always at the office. No, relationships should come before work. It shouldn't be acceptable in our culture that you're missing out on important life events or important life events and people you care about because you had to work. But we let it go. If someone's like, oh, I had to work, we're like, oh, we get it. We shouldn't get it, right? The system should have to prioritize other important priorities, but we're not there yet. But nonetheless, at least the fact that we're extending burnout to really focus on work is a sign that we're starting to at least identify that work stress is a major issue. You know, there's a lot of studies saying that sex is on the decline and that Americans are having less sex than they've ever had. And that's because of we're constantly under stress, and stress is not something that supports arousal and eroticism and intimacy. And so hopefully as we work less, which is what we need to do, focus more on self-care and prioritizing that, people will feel more refreshed and more up for sexuality. It's some good stuff. All right, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to be doing a little Freak on the Streets, and then, of course, our question of the night. Listen to Loveline on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page, but right now it's time for some Freak on the Streets.
Hi, Dr. Chris. My question is about divorce. How would I approach a man who I might want to date about the fact that I've been divorced twice? I've had gentlemen in the past that have told me that they wouldn't date anyone who was married more than once. But I was married twice, once very young for just a year, and then again 17 years later for another 20 years. But men my age are a little bit nervous about dating a woman who they know has been married more than once. So would you suggest that I tell them about it or just wait to see how the relationship develops before I say anything at all? Thanks for your help.
I love this question because nothing bothers me more than people that divorce shame. You know what someone having been divorced means? It means they've been in relationships. We've all been in relationships. We've all left relationships. Whether they were married or not, they were in a relationship and they left one. Having been married shouldn't be stigmatized as though it's a bigger failure. They signed some paperwork. That doesn't make that more of a failure. So number one, you shouldn't tell someone anything that you think might be stigmatizing too soon. I think people have to earn the right to triggering information, right? So I would say you go on a first couple dates and you share all the fun, superficial, topical stuff, the movies you like, your favorite color, you know, things that you want to do with your future. And you really connect and bond over that. And then once they've earned the trust and there's some attachment, that's when you can share some of the bigger, important, more triggering things like a recovery history, a struggle with drugs and alcohol, some mental health stuff. And sadly, divorce, it shouldn't be a trigger. Again, we've all been multiple relationships. We've left them. Some people choose marriage for some of them and some people don't. But that shouldn't be something that speaks to their ability to be a healthy partner in the future. If anything, it should be a sign that, wow, this person really knows how to commit, so much so that they went through with the marriage multiple times. This person really understands intimacy and connection to a deep level. I think it should be a positive attribute. So if someone is that primitive, that they really see that as a mark against you, then I'm concerned about their mental health. And I would say maybe you don't want to bring them in and date them, right? But you don't need to disclose that right away. Sometimes we think, you know, out of our anxiety that we should disclose anything that's triggering and get approval right away. But no, they have to earn their right to that. So you don't need to disclose that. And I want you to feel confident in the fact that you've committed deeply and you've been married before. It's a beautiful freaking thing.
So I broke up with my boyfriend of 5 years after he cheated on me. It was really public and embarrassing. And I found out that it had been going on basically the entire time of our relationship. He's gone to see a therapist and, you know, he has come clean literally about everything, even more than I probably would have liked to have known. But he wants to get back together and, you know, I really love him. And I'd love your advice to see what you think I should do.
You take them back. People have to be allowed to do the work, repair, take accountability, and get forgiveness and come back. We all have a history. And if we are all held accountable and seen as nothing more than the problematic things we've done in the past, then none of us would be dateable. You know, I'm always comfortable with someone being brought back in if they've done something problematic, as long as they've done the work to understand what that was about, as long as they promise to be better and can explain how, and are willing to take accountability. We've all done problematic things. We can't vote people off the planet because they've wounded us. And once a cheater, always a cheater is not true. There's a multitude of reasons as to why people cheat, and people have to be allowed to be forgiven and to do healing work. That is the basis of therapy. If we don't believe in that, then we need to get rid of therapy. Therapy is grounded in the idea that people can change and grow and be better. And they can. And cheating can be a very powerful learning experience. And so you see it as such. So take them back. I think it's a powerful thing. I'm on board. Yeah. Beautiful. So we still got time to weigh in on the question night. Question night is your caught cheating horror story. We want to hear the good, the bad, the ugly, and the funny. Also, phone lines are open. 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, it's that time. Question of the night time. Caught cheating horror stories. Oof, it's going to be good. Here we go. Listener said, I cheated on my boyfriend a few times. Nothing past making out and cuddling with people on Molly. Oh, there we go. A good old friend, Molly, who gets us to be touching up on everybody. He's having an incredibly hard time forgiving me and trusting me again, which is making us both hate the relationship. I lied to him about it for 4 months because I was so scared of losing him because of those stupid mistakes. See, this is what I'm saying, though. I think it's really important for us to not disregard the story of the person who's cheated. This person sounds remorseful. They sound like they want to take some accountability. And that's why I like the idea of having a conversation. What was that? What was it about for you? Why did you cheat? What made you choose that of all the different options? Was I not safe for you to go to talk about things that were wrong? But in this case, it was just your drug use. So stop hanging out with Molly. You know what I mean? Try to have fun without Molly, and then you might not be rubbing up on everybody. Just saying. All right. Another caught cheating horror story. Pretty sure one of my exes cheated on me and then came home and had sex with me right after, which to this day is the most disgusting and despicable thing anyone has ever done to me. It was made 1,000 times worse because this was done by a girl I loved and had been together with for years. I'm sorry. That's heartbreaking. I mean, that's what's so sad about this topic is you hear a lot of wounding. I mean, it's the lack of trust, the lack of care for your impact on your other. Oof, of all the things to do, cheating is just culturally one of the most damaging ones. All right. Sorry. Here we go. Here's another one. Fell in love. Dated for 3 years. She meant the world to me. Got dumped a week before I would have proposed. Had the ring and the whole event planned out. Really devastated me. Turns out she left me for an upgrade she'd been cheating with for a long time. I found out later from her friends that she cheated constantly throughout the time we were together. I'm sorry. My heart really goes out to you on that one. It really, really, truly does. That sounds so painful. I'm glad, though, that you hadn't proposed. I'm glad that you hadn't and maybe they had accepted and you would have been trapped in that. But hopefully you're able to still hold space to the fact that there are people that can be trusted and do like long-term commitment. In fact, our producer over there, Samantha, maybe I'll set you up, send some pics. Okay. Always trying to play matchmaker. You know what I mean? We all deserve love. Hey, slide into my DMs. Maybe I'm interested. You know what I mean? Okay. Here's another one. I found out I was the other girl. I'd been kind of seeing this dude and was expecting him to come over at any time. I got a phone call and I answered it saying, hey, hot stuff, when you getting here? And there's a long pause on the other end. Then I hear a woman's voice. Then she confronts me about how long I've been seeing him, and turns out she had been living with him for years, and she just found out he was cheating with me. That's heartbreaking for both of you. Being the other person and not knowing. If you're the other person and you do know, please stop, because I do hold you accountable. I do hold everyone accountable for their decision making, and if they knowingly are aware that they're part of harming someone, that's not mental health. So if you're knowingly the other person, knock that off. And if you're not, I'm sorry to hear that, because that's got to be devastating. I hope, though, that she accidentally answered. I hope that she wasn't answering to hold you accountable. I'd rather her go to her cheating partner and say what's going on, because it's not your fault. You didn't know. But sometimes we like act it out on everyone. So anywho. Okay. Caught cheating horror story. Me and my best friend, also a guy, were sitting next to each other at a football game. His girlfriend was on the other side of him. We were holding hands behind his back. She left him and started dating me eventually. My best friend was no longer my friend. Then a year into our relationship, she wound up cheating on me with my old best friend. Laugh out loud. Needless to say, me and my old best friend became friends again, and we both dropped her like a hot potato. Wow. I mean, that's something to bond over, I guess. Hey, look at us. You know what I mean? We are a cuckoo bunch. God, that's a fun crowd to run with. Yikes. Oh, no, guys. Yeah, what's up with that? That's horrible. Oh, yeah, yeah. You'd think the people at the game sitting behind you might call attention to that. You know what I mean? Like, yo, dude, your girl's holding someone's hand. Turn around. Take a little snapshot. Yikes. All right, here's another one. Came home early. They were fast enough to get dressed, but not in a natural state of being. Oh, you know what I mean? They had that look of guilt on their eyes. If that makes sense. Sure does. It was obvious something was just going down. Very cliched, got walked in on and tried to play cool like you see on TV. I asked him to leave and he did. We argued. She tried to lie, but soon confessed. It wasn't the first time she cheated on me, but it was the first time I caught her in the act. Everything in the past was just text and stuff. She said she never slept with other people and it was just pics and flirting. Well, I guess it escalated for sure. Walked in on that one. Ay, ay, ay. I've luckily never had that experience. I've never walked in on it. That's real. I've had every other experience though, you know? Anywho, it's not about me. It's about y'all. Got another story. Went to log into email and a suggested one that I didn't recognize popped up. I answered all his security questions and reset his password to find emails between him and our neighbor. We were in therapy to recover from him cheating with her, and they were waxing poetic about their love and when I'd be out of the house so they could be together. The actual horror story is that our 7-year-old daughter is the one who accidentally caught them originally by walking into our bedroom while I was at work. Ay, ay, ay. How do you even explain that to the 7-year-old? That's old enough to have a sense of something going on, right? Jeez. How do you... Yeah, wow. All right. Good parenting, you know? Oh, my God. Here's another one. These are good. Thank you guys for being so vulnerable. Caught cheating horror story. My wife went on a girls' trip this weekend. On Saturday, her group was hanging out with guys who were on a bachelor party weekend trip. The guys were buying everything. I'm not sure the exact numbers, but I'd imagine there were 5 girls, 5 guys. Anyway, they ended up in the guy's suite, all 10 of them together. The girls started leaving because it was late, and my wife's best friend was the last girl to leave, other than my wife. This best friend recently cheated on her husband of 6 months. The best friend left my drunk wife in the suite. My wife ended up having sex with one of the guys. She came back to the best friend's room and cried. Then her best friend called me and told me. I forgave her, though, as her friend said she was genuinely sorry.
Intuition.
Yeah. I mean, look, here's my thing. You know, drunken behavior, we are not at our best. Our inhibitions are down. We're not doing our, you know, best judgment. So that's in there. However, you have to be held accountable for everything you do nonetheless. And if you tend to do stupid things while drinking, yeah, adult time. Stop drinking. I don't know, man. These are rough. Thanks for sharing, though. All right. So we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll slide into DMs. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris and radio.com on the new Channel Q.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right. We're back. And it's that time to slide into the DMs. Sliding into the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. Here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris. It's a long one, you guys, so hang in there with us. Hey, Dr. Chris. Me and my boyfriend have only been together for a month and a half. He was driven there on our first date by his mom, and his mom actually went on the date with us since she was his ride home. We three saw a movie together, and it was extremely awkward. And later, on our second date, I had to drive well over 30 minutes across town to meet him at this ice cream place near where he lives, and he explained that he had to take an Uber to this place. He finally came clean and told me that he had legally was not allowed to drive because his license was suspended for a DUI last fall. on the one hand, I did appreciate his honesty over something like that, but it has become an undeniable issue in the relationship. His mom lives up north and comes down to our city every 2 weeks to drive him to his DUI classes, and the three of us recently went camping together. Wow, you're really getting to know his family. He had mentioned a camping trip, and I liked the idea of the two of us camping and spending some time together. But then it turned out that his mom was camping with us. We even shared a tent together, and it was a very awkward, uncomfortable experience. Simply put, I'm embarrassed by him, and I feel bad about it because I really do care about him. Do you think it's pointless to try to get him to be less of a mama's boy and grow up a bit, or should I just move on? All right, so I guess his mom doesn't really need to be there, I'm starting to see. He could be Ubering everywhere. So even though he can't drive legally, I'm unclear why she's coming down to drive him to his DUI classes. Can he not afford all the Ubers? Let's just assume he can. Yes, I think it's fair for you to tell him to be less of a mama's boy. I don't like that term. I'm all about people being very close to their parents. I'm okay with people saying their mom or their dad is their best friend. That's awesome. Great. But I think you have a right to say, I want to spend alone time. Whether it's his mom he wants to bring all the time, or his best friend, or even his dog, you have a right to say, I want one-on-one time without distractions. It's completely appropriate. Yeah, there's going to be times where maybe he wants to see his mom, people want to bring their pets. Awesome. But that shouldn't have to be all the time. And you can also ask him for a heads up so that you know, say to him, hey, I want to spend alone time. If you're planning on bringing your mom, please don't surprise me with that. Give me a heads up. Let him know you support him being very close with his mom, but that it's important for intimacy and building a relationship that you and him have alone time. So there you go. The next DM. Dear Dr. Chris, I spent my recent birthday and Valentine's Day alone, something I was afraid to do, but it was liberating. I had been continuously in relationships or dating for the past 6 years. The only long gap was 1 year after my first love. Since then, the gaps were only a month or two. What worries me is there is someone I'm dating who seems growingly into me, but after I got back from my solo trip, I feel numb towards him and everyone in general. Before my trip, I thought I was in love with him. Is this emotional fatigue? I want to keep dating him, but I feel like I'm not sure anymore and he might notice it. How do I deal with numbness combined with wanting to feel and connect? So here's the thing, you know, you guys were dating. It's okay to realize that you're in a place where maybe you need more solo time or alone time. Dating someone doesn't mean that you have to consistently be with them, right? And a lot of people, when they take trips alone or they have a lot of downtime on their own because their partner travels or whatnot, they realize that they value that. And that's okay. There's no one right way to run a relationship. And so if you're realizing alone time or solitude is really important, assert that and leave it up to him to decide for himself if that makes sense to him. You don't have to decide for him and the relationship if he can handle, you know, not seeing you as often as he might want. So kind of put it back on him. Just follow what makes sense to you. Is it emotional fatigue? Maybe. It's hard to be around people, but we got to learn how to do it. But I wouldn't try to caretake him as much. You know, kind of leave it on him to decide what he wants. So there you go. Sliding into the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. That's our show, guys. We'll be back on Monday, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You guys have an awesome, awesome weekend, and have an awesome and good night.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.